Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. All right, you guys, welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm pretty excited. We haven't gotten to talk to any of our kind of judging community in a while, and we've talked to a lot of really famous people over the years, and I think it's time to start talking to some of our new judges so that people know what to look for. And so one of our newer judges, Channing Sheets, just started judging in 22. Is that right, babe?
February 21.
Oh, my goodness. And is judging at Westminster Kennel Club next year. So this is a huge deal, and I'm super excited for you. And so I wanted everybody to get to meet you. All right, you guys, did you know that September is National Pet Insurance Month? What? If you're not already sending your litters home with Trupanion's Go Home Day offer, now is the perfect time to start. As a member of Trupanion's Breeder Support Program, you can give your buyers exclusive access to their special offer for immediate pet medical insurance coverage. Protection starts the moment the offer is activated, keeping your puppies covered as they settle into their new homes. You know that puppies have a knack for mischief. In fact, Trupanion claims data shows that nearly one in two puppies need unexpected care before their first birthday. But with Trupanion and their exclusive Go Home Day offer, you can rest easy knowing pets are protected for whatever trouble they may find in their new home. Plus, Trupanion can pay their portion of the bill directly to veterinary hospitals at checkout, so owners can say yes to the care their pet needs without having to worry about the cost or waiting for a reimbursement check. When you join Trupanion's Breeder Support Program, not only will you unlock this special offer for your buyers, you'll gain insight into your litter's health with free reporting to help you support the long-term health of your lines. You'll also enjoy educational resources to share with your buyers, personalized support, and more. Even better, the program is completely free for breeders. Join Trupanion's Breeder Support Program today at trupanion.com/puredogtalk. Trupanion is underwritten in Canada by Accelerant Insurance Company of Canada, or GPIC Insurance Company, and in the United States by American Pet Insurance Company, or ZPIC Insurance Company. So how you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Excellent. So give us kind of the 411. Give us a little breakdown how and why you wound up in this fantastic sport of ours.
Oh, there's a roller coaster ride. So I grew up in southern Indiana by way of Kentucky. My dad and my grandparents lived in Kentucky. My mother lived in Indiana. And my dad was an avid outdoorsman. So if it moved, he shot it. And we hunted everything. So we had Labradors. I trained his dogs for the field. We had Beagles. We had Foxhounds. We had treeing walkers. And so you can't be like your parents, so you have to rebel. So as a teenager, I got into the whole dog show thing before. I got my first German Shepherd in 1986. It was a pet, basically obedience dog. And then in 88, I went to my first match. And then around 89, 90, I started showing some dogs for some other people. And I think I got my first show dog. Well, my first show dog was actually a Kazon, if you would believe it.
I saw keys on your judging list. I'm like, really?
Yeah, because some of the keys people that know me, it was like my original dog show breed. So I'm kind of thought of in a keys way. I'm key friendly. And it's a funny story. So we had a local German Shepherd club. And there's a lady who her dog won the national this year. Her name is Jerry Kissling. At that time, I think her name was Jerry Spalding. And she got married to Granger. And she originally started in German Shepherds. And so at that time, there were a whole bunch of health issues and stuff that were going around. Some bloodlines that were being used, heavily used. So she wanted to get out of it, and she got into keys. Okay. Well, I end up getting my pet keys from her sister because she had a baby and couldn't keep it anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to turn into a show dog, and she was one of my mentors. And so it was weird. So as she's getting out of German Shepherds, and as I decided I don't like excessive grooming, I switched from keys to German Shepherds.
Wrong breed, Channing. Like, really? Come on, man.
It's a lot of hair.
It's a lot of hair. Oh my God. And so you wound up in German Shepherds, and that's pretty much, I mean, from California and where I've seen you, that's primarily what you showed and bred. Am I correct?
Yes. So when I got in graduate school, because, you know, you don't know where you're going to be, you don't know where you're going to land a job. When I'm in German Shepherds, I want to be in German Shepherds. I want to establish my own bloodline. I want to breed dogs. I want to show dogs the whole thing. And so because my life was in flux, because I was in school, I decided to dabble in Doberman. So I co-bred a few litters with a guy in Michigan, and I showed Dobermans for a while. So that's like my number two breed, second love.
Right. Very cool. And talk to me about kind of your vision for German Shepherds, right? I've had Jimmy on the podcast. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about Shepherds. Tell me about yours. Tell me how you see them in your mind.
So I teach a lot. I'm on the Judges Ed Committee for GSDC of A. And when I teach, I start this way. First job is tending. Mm-hmm. So people are like, why do you gate them excessively? And literally, if you ever go online or go on YouTube and watch one of the German Seeger shows, in the old days, they would have stadiums of 100,000 people in Germany, and they would run these dogs into the ground. They have teams of handlers and track suits, and they keep switching out, and they run and run and run, because literally, they want to see who breaks down first.
Yeah, right.
So you got to be able to tend stock. So you got to be able to gate. You got to do it all day long. You have good heart and lung function. And then the secondary job is bite work. So you need to have a good bite, you need to have all your teeth, and you need to have good occlusion. Now, albeit a button, first premolar, is a fault just because it's not a gripping tooth. Anything else, I'm pretty much death on for that reason.
Okay.
And then we worry about how pretty it is.
right, exactly. I'm kind of the same way with wire hairs. Like, it's got to have a coat, people. It doesn't have a coat, like, I'm not interested. It's got to. And so you've shown Shepherds, I mean, throughout the country. Like, I talked to one of my Shepherd people that was showing at the Seeger show, like in Mexico, doing that marathon run. I mean, there's a reason y'all are like super fit people running around that ring, you know?
We start road working ourselves about a minimum of 6 weeks, but preferably 8 weeks before the national, or else you won't survive.
Oh my God. And so what's your personal best? How long have you run around a ring with a dog? I'm just like, I need to know these things.
So when you're at a national, the last time I was handling dogs for people was 2020. Mm-hmm. So when you're at a national and you're in specials, if you're going to make it to the end, you're not going to do less than 10 or 12 laps. And oftentimes, if you're one of those top spots, you're going to do like 20 laps. So I had a dog I was showing for someone. He finished number 5 select. And I think Bob Slay was judging, and we ran into the ground. We ran a lot.
Jeez, I occasionally show up and just watch the specialties, you know, and I'm like, oh man, that is just, it's a whole thing. Pulled a groin muscle trying to help somebody show Shepherds once. It was bad. Like, I'm not built for that, y'all. It's a thing. So it's a transition. Like, I know this from handling now to judging. We both started judging about the same time, and you've got your friends that are handlers, and you have your friends now that aren't handlers, and you can't talk to them anymore. So talk about how you manage that.
I have never had that problem. And I'm kind of like you in that one of the good things about me is I'm brutally honest. One of the bad things about me is I'm brutally honest.
I feel ya.
So even when people are like, you know, it could have been 20 years ago, they're like, come over, we're having a puppy party. Let's evaluate this litter of puppies. I'm like, get rid of it. I'm brutally honest. And so they know, don't ask unless you want to know.
Yeah.
And you aren't special because you're my friend. My opinion is my opinion, irrespective of our relationship. Our relationship is something different.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel. And I know I've had a few people that were unimpressed because I didn't, like, I wasn't going to play the game. And I'm not playing the game, man.
Speaking of that, one of the common misconceptions, especially with newer exhibitors, is that there's this favoritism towards handlers and this and that and the other, or people that you've known for a long time. Here's the thing. There's a disadvantage because, hey, everybody's going to be looking, and they're going to try to come up with a reason for your dog not to be justified to be put up, even if it's the best one because of our relationship. And B, I know you know better than to bring me something less.
Yes,
so
that.
I'm going to be harder on you.
My God, Channing, that is so on point.
You know better.
You know better than this. I have literally said that out loud to people. Like, you know better than this. What do you
And
think?
I get it. You handle dogs for a living. It pays your bills. It pays your rent. It pays for your van. It helps you show your and breed your own dogs. And so sometimes handlers take dogs that is not a reflection of their breeding program or their idea of what breed type is for that breed. But you still know better.
You know better. And the smart ones know that I know they know better and expect that they're not going to win. So what has been the toughest part for you? Like, just the transition, getting started, doing the whole process. What's been the most difficult for you?
The most difficult part of becoming a judge for me was time and expense. So I still work full time. I still try to breed my own dogs. I still try to show my own dogs, and balancing that with having to travel for permit assignments and having to travel for workshops. And it's just an additional where, you know, when I was young and I really had the bug, you wanted to be at a dog show every weekend. Then I got to middle age and I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to pick and choose the right panels for the right dog. And I'm going to go try to be successful and be done with it. Right. And then balance it with my regular work life and personal life and whatever. And so now I feel like I don't have that anymore. I'm always at a dog show for some odd reason.
Right. 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 And you mentioned going to graduate school. What do you do? What's your real world job? Like, I don't even know that answer.
Oh, God. So let me take you on a roller coaster ride.
Another
so
in my one. Previous, yes.
In my previous life, I went to Purdue Veterinary Teaching Hospital and the veterinary technology program. And I worked in emergency medicine and critical care there for a long time.
Awesome.
I taught senior students. I taught residents, interns, and vet tech students. Then, because when you work emergency, you work holidays and after hours, and being a vet tech doesn't pay in order to support the dog show habit that I have, I decided to go back to school. So medical technology, so I was a lab rat, and then I went to graduate school for public health. And then I used to do communicable disease epidemiology, like in a 9-county region in Ohio. And then I came to California in 2005, and I worked in bioterrorism for the State Department of Public Health. I did some communicable disease epidemiology, and I ran the bioterrorism program where we have all the employees that go through security clearance and all the agents that could kill everybody on the planet. So, like, we test for white powders and all that kind of stuff. Then I got recruited.
Wait a minute. Like, I want to know more about this.
Then I got recruited away to go to CalOSHA, and I was writing Ebola guidelines and pandemic influenza guidelines. And I do a lot of outbreak investigations, but I also specialize in workplace violence, so I do like high profile actor shooter cases and things.
Holy crap. Okay, so y'all, we talk all the time about there's really cool and interesting people in dogs completely separate from their dog stuff. This is one of those times. That is fantastic. Wow. So that is a busy job and you have a lot to fit in around that, right?
Absolutely.
And you are still actively physically breeding dogs yourself.
Yeah, I have a litter of, they were 9 weeks on Monday, two bitches. Now, I want to sidebar for a second. So we talk about losing people in dogs and why people don't stick with it. It is difficult. And it's not just difficult as a new exhibitor. Maybe you can't find the right mentor, which is a problem sometimes. Or maybe you get discouraged because you have a series of bad experiences. Even the existing diehards like myself, breeding. So, for example, the expense is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, a number of months ago, I was talking to Patty Neal because she was having a couple of litters of boys. So she bred a couple of bitches and I bred my bitch about the same time. And I'm like, I bought, you know, paid for semen. Mm-hmm. I had four breedings from this dog. I used two on another bitch she didn't take a few years ago. These were my last two. I used it on my current bitch. This dog has been dead for 30-something years, so I can't get this blood anymore. This is a maiden bitch. And so people are like, you're crazy for using. I'm like, in this day and age, as hard as it is to find pet homes, because people are like, why am I paying you thousands of dollars for this dog when I could go get a dog for free down the street from Joe Schmo that's poorly bred or whatever? This is why. So not only do all the genetic testing on the parents and we know about temperaments and all that kind of thing, and we try to do the responsible breeding thing. So it ended up being about $4,100 for surgical implant, all the progesterones and all that stuff, because I had to leave her there because obviously if you're working stiff and you're doing all that stuff, you can't drive back and forth to the vet every day. And the repo, that's like an hour and a half away. So she was there, boarding, did that part. Then she gets to day 63 and she hasn't gone into labor. No signs of labor. And I'm like, we had done an ultrasound, pregnancy confirmation ultrasound, and there were three and a possible puppy. And then because one was resorbing, yeah, we checked a week later, right? And then there were two. There was another that was resorbing. I'm like, is she not able to maintain hormone levels? All this kind of stuff. You can do progesterone testing, yep, to see.
Yep.
And we get to day 63, no puppies. And so it was like, phone call to the vet, take them. Because I don't want to lose what I got, right? So I was fortunate to get them. But $10,000+ later,
yes,
that's just to get them on the ground. Yes. That's not including all the puppy expenses and all the things that come with that. So like, this is why people don't want to do it.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, I had the same thing. I had two back-to-back frozen semen, surgical implant, singleton, C-section in a week. $8,000 for two puppies.
Exactly.
One of which I gave away to my breeder friend that is taking on my breeding program. Right? So, like,
then they think, oh, you're going to get rich. I'm like, even if I sold these at $5,000 a piece, which they're both staying because I can't get this blood, so they're going to stay.
Yeah, those are permanent.
They're not going anywhere. But even if I sold them at $5,000 a piece, I would still be in the red because there's all the expenses of just raising puppies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
Purina is excited to tell you about the new My Purina app that lets you share with your puppy buyers. Using the app, pet owners can shop, earn points, and get rewarded for their purchases. Here's how it works. Pet owners download the My Purina app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store on their mobile device. They also can sign up for an account and access the program's features online by visiting purina.com/mypurina-app. When pet owners buy everyday pet supplies like treats and ProPlan puppy and dog food, they can scan the receipts to earn rewards. Dog toys, food coupons, tote bags, bag dispensers, smart ID pet tags, and training clickers are just some of the great items available. The My Purina app supports puppy buyers and rewards them for being a super pet parent. They can find the formula that suits their pet's unique needs and explore the train and play content library for a bonding experience with their pet. Encourage your clients to join the app that brings pets and the Purina passion together. My Purina, where you shop, earn, and get rewarded. All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life, you know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. This is a great segue to talk about. You and I are of an age. Like, really, basically, we've got to be about the same. So talk about, from your perspective, you've seen the dog show scene in different parts of the country, from a different group than I'm from, you know, like that. Talk to us about what you've seen since the mid-80s, which is when I started, to today.
So I'm from Evansville, Indiana. And as you know, the Evansville-Louisville Kennel Club cluster was the largest in the country forever. Mm-hmm. I remember walking into that building and every ring and every wing in that Kentucky Expo Center being filled full of dogs. And the average entry for some of these larger entry breeds was 120, 140 plus, right?
Yep.
Those days are gone. Oh, so that's what I grew up in. And now it's like, what happened?
I went to Portland this year. So Portland was always like numerically one of our biggest dog shows on the West Coast, right? Portland in January. The high number entry day, there was, I don't know, 1,700 dogs.
Like, wow.
What are we talking about here? So we know the numbers are down. We know that part of it is because people can't afford it. Part of it is because, you know, it can be a little bit not kind and gentle. It's competitive. And that is not always something that everybody can deal with. So what do we do? How do we adapt?
So it's a complex issue. Part of it is, like we talk about legislation, zoning for dogs, mm-hmm. and not be able to get permits and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there are limited restrictions on that. Gone are the days where the average person would have a 15, 25 dog kennel and they could breed litter mate bitches from a litter different ways and see how bloodlines develop and all that stuff. You just, it's not feasible to keep that many dogs anymore. Just the expense of feeding them, right. not including veterinary care and all that stuff,
just dog
is astronomical.
Yeah.
Just dog food. I had this discussion with one of my friends from back east in Ohio. He's like, oh, we spend about $1,200 a month. And then one of my friends in LA, who only has like four dogs, mind you, spends $2,000 a month. But she buys some special food for some of them that have some GI issues, whatever. But I'm like, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
It's just not sustainable.
Right. So what's the solution? I'm asking. Let's brainstorm it right here. Let's solve all the world's problems. My favorite thing to do.
So I don't know that I'm able to solve the expense problem. What I have been able to work on is keeping some new people. So like one of the weirdest things, so not to be negative, but so there were a couple people that came to me like, oh, a couple people were resenting you because you got an assignment with Westminster and you're a new judge. And I'm like, that's fine. I get it. They've been doing it longer. They have more experience. They could be excellent judges. I have no qualms with that. You feel how you feel. You have a right to that. What I will say is how you treat new people makes or breaks whether you get assignments, whether they want to show to you, or whether those individuals will continue to participate. So like people send me links to posts on Facebook and stuff on Rate Your Judges and stuff. And I'll have these reviews from new people that are like, oh, he took time with my puppy. And I really focus on puppy because I don't want them to have a bad experience.
Right.
And I don't want a new person to have a bad experience.
Right.
Those are the two that we want to keep coming back. And if you do that and they bring their friend or their friend, you'll grow exponentially, but you have to make positive experiences.
Yeah.
No one wants to go somewhere where they're going to have a negative experience.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree on that. Also, my thing, raising up baby dog breeders. We need more people breeding good dogs. And so what I've done is, because I just variety of reasons, I'm not physically kind of in a position to do that anymore. So I have parked a whole bunch of good bitches out with good people who are willing to work with me, who are willing to actually, you know, listen and work with me. And I'm not in charge, but I'm kind of advising, right? Like I've reached the advisory role. And that's really useful.
Absolutely. I have a Doberman friend that I got my last Doberman with. She's a big breeder in Pennsylvania. And she does exactly that. She'll co-own dog bitches, whatever, with people. And she gives people a chance to have a good dog, to have a positive experience, all supervised because she still co-owns it and she mentors them. Mm-hmm. But you feel like someone cares about you.
You're
and
part
even
of
if
a
you
family.
Have, yeah, it's more of a, you're part of a family.
Yeah, I love, it's a really good system. And we have the Scotia Dogs family. And so if somebody comes to me looking for a dog, I've got three or four places around the country from Alaska to Iowa, right? That I can say, well, here, 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 or here could be a good bet. And building those networks, I think is something really important.
How you treat people is everything.
Yeah, it is. Okay. So on the judging part of it, you've got not quite the whole group, but you're getting pretty close.
Three more to go.
Yeah, I know. I just turned in my last two for the sporting group. Like I can do this. This. COVID was a killer. Anyway, so what speaks to you when you're in the ring? Like everybody has a priority. Everybody has a thing that matters, essentially across breeds. Like what are your hallmarks of what you're looking for in a dog that makes your heart go pitter-pat?
So it's easy for me for herding because that's where I come from. And I've shown most of those breeds and I've been around them and I have dogs that are herding titles. I've been to herding trials. It's easy for me for sporting. It's easy for me for hounds because I grew up with that. I know what they look like in the field and how they're supposed to work. You know, I dabbled in keys. So I have a non-sporting breed and I've been studying poodles and stuff like that. Where I struggle is there are some breeds where you read their standard and motion is not described and it's virtually non-existent. And type for them is a proportion or a head. Right. That's where I struggle because, you know, if you talk about a short hair or a wire hair, having the heart and lung function right. and be able to quarter a field all day long, I get that. Motion is important. Structure is important. I understand that.
Yes.
If you talk about some sort of scent hound or sight hound that has to run through the field all day long, I get that. But if it's not structural movement and it's something else where the emphasis is placed, that's a struggle for me because my first thing is temperament. If it can't stand on the leash and be approached by a stranger, it probably shouldn't be there.
It shouldn't be bred. It shouldn't be thrown. I am so with Jesus. We literally are soulmates. This is crazy. It's like, yeah, this is basic. This is really basic. If our dogs that we're showing can't be touched by somebody.
Agreed.
Why are you there?
I had a friend of mine that has Belgians. And she said to me, she was watching a shepherd ring one day. She's like, what are they doing? I'm like, they're doing a temperament test. Right. They're required to do it. And all breed judges are no longer required to do it because some people were doing it wrong. And if you approach a herding or working dog or a guardy dog wrong, you'll get bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I showed Akitas. Trust me.
You understand.
I get it.
So I have a funny story about this too. So my very first German Shepherd show dog, my dad was driving me to dog shows and we would throw him in the back of the car. And one time the dog was jumping in the back seat of the car. My dad was closing the door and the door just smacked the dog's tail on the way in. The dog hated him from that point forward. And my dad didn't get it because he comes from Labradors and Hounds, which they recover quickly and they love everybody. A herding dog doesn't do that. Mm-mm. He just looked at him like, you hit me. And so I'm like, you didn't establish a relationship with this dog and earn his trust after that incident. So of course he hates you.
Yeah, that's given. I was talking to somebody. I always describe Akitas as people with fur. Like you would not walk up to a total stranger on the street, grab them around the neck and go ugly, ugly, ugly like that. And if you do that to an Akita, you will get bitten. I mean, that's just, you know, they think they're people and it's wrong. And so knowing how to approach breeds appropriately, it's shocking to me how many people don't get that.
They don't. And he didn't because he was a Labrador person. He's used to happy-go-lucky all the time. And so, like, you could smack a Labrador and it'll bounce right back and wag his tail and kiss you in the face. And
that was fun.
A German Shepherd will not do that. You become enemy number one.
Exactly. Very rapidly. Okay. So, final question. We could chat for hours and hours and hours. Final question for today. We talked about it. Did you think about it? So, our favorite driving game is always our all-time best in show lineup. So group winner from each group, and then who goes best in show?
Well, I have to qualify this. What we talked about, there are certain groups that I'm comfortable with, and there are certain groups I'm not. The one I'm the least comfortable with is terriers, because that's a skill set that I don't necessarily have because I'm not a terrier person. So I don't know whether this dog is good or not, but I would say the Kerry Blue that Bill McFadden used to show.
Yeah, Mick was good. You nailed that one. That is a slam dunk.
Sporting, there's so many. But the dog that Gordon said or that Ken Murray used to show.
Yeah, that was a real good one.
Hound group is no question, Trist. Period.
There
will never be another like that.
No.
Non-sporting, probably that standard that Dennis McCoy used to show, That's My Boy.
Oh, That's My Boy dog? Yes. Yeah.
Toys. This is another one I'm not very comfortable with.
I know.
My favorite toy breed is Affenpinschers. I think they're adorable.
So there you go.
Well, no, I'd probably pick a poodle. There was a poodle years ago, Smash or something, JP Winner Victory or something like that. That one.
Yep.
Herding.
Come on.
There's so many herding dogs that I loved. I'm going to say, because I think she was robbed because she never got best in show, Altana's Mystique.
Yeah.
Mystique. When she was young.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about her. She had a sister that won our national in 1989. Mystique was third to her behind another bitch. The sister had a little bit better shoulder, was shown primarily at the specialties. Mystique didn't start specialing in the Aubrey, so she was like five. Mm-hmm. If they would have started her in her prime like at two or three, oh my God. Well, she already has 275 Aubrey best in shows, and nobody's going to break that record.
Nope.
Even if they could in terms of number of best in shows, they won't in terms of dogs to feed it, because there were just way more dogs that showed back then than do now. So it's not comparable, actually.
No.
It's so not- that's kind of where I'm at.
I like
those
it.
Are my groups.
Okay, so who goes best in show?
Trist.
Oh, really? You're going to have Trist over Mystique, huh?
Well, I love them both, but Trist, I mean, I don't think I've seen an Afghan like that since then.
No.
I've seen a number of good German Shepherds, and there's a number I could throw in there and give a best in show to, and there's a number of them that have won best in show. But yeah, Trist.
Yeah. It was magic. All kinds of magic. I love it. All right. Well, Channing, you have an absolute blast judging at Westminster Kennel Club. I am super thrilled for you.
Thank you.
I know that you are going to go on and do great things. So congrats on that. And thanks for coming and talking to us.
Thank you, ma'am. Have a good rest of your day.
Hey, guys. I am super excited about this. Marty and I have been working on a brand new series of seminars that we're bringing to the dog fancy. It's called Pedigrees to Pups, and we are launching it with sort of a taste test on June 13th here in Grants Pass, Oregon, my hometown, with my local dog show. We are bringing together the art and the science of dog breeding in one place, and we're so excited. We're going to talk everything from selecting your foundation bitch and stud dog to reading pedigrees and breeding theory to mating and whelping. The event here in Grants Pass is a short little overview, 3 hours before the dog show starts. And on the weekend of September 5th in Hawaii, we will have a 3-day seminar. And the following weekend in Wisconsin, we'll have another 2-day seminar. And so if you're really interested in doing a deep dive, you want to hang out with Marty and I, ask questions, get one-on-one advice, up close and personal mentoring, this is the way to do it. Stop by puredogtalk.com, go to the events page, and you will find out about the event in June. And we'll keep it updated as we have details on the events in Hawaii and Wisconsin. We look forward to seeing you guys there and cannot wait to kick off this seminar series.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.